Most venerable Bhikkhu Sangha and my dear Dhamma brothers and Dhamma sisters, we are here this evening to discuss certain aspects of the teachings of the Enlightened One. Every aspect of his teaching is so great, so wonderful, so rational, so pragmatic, so scientific, so result-oriented. You practice it and you get the benefit here and now. Not to wait till the end of the life, here and now. In short, the teaching is sabba papa se karanam kusala upasampada sacitam pariyodapanam etam buddhanasasanam etam buddhana sasanam. What a wonderful person. He doesn't say this is my sasana. He doesn't say this is my teaching. He says this is the teaching of all the enlightened ones. And to become an enlightened person is not just a monopoly of Gautama. He kept on saying, before me, so many became Buddha, and after me, so many are going to become Buddha. Anyone who becomes Buddha becomes an enlightened person, will teach only this, nothing else. Because a Buddha becomes so practical, mere speculations, imaginations, discussions doesn't help. He is a Buddha because he has realized the truth himself. And in his teaching, he wants people to realize the truth themselves, not merely accept the teaching of Buddha, not merely believe the teaching of Buddha. A blind belief will not help. One may very well believe at the emotional level, at the devotional level. One may also believe at the intellectual level, because the teaching is so pragmatic, so rational. That won't help. One is to accept it at the actual level. That means the experiential level. He wants everyone to realize the truth that he has realized himself. And the truth is the same. This is not the truth of Buddhism. This is not the truth of the Buddhists. The truth is universal. A Buddha never teaches Buddhism. A Buddha never converts anybody to become a Buddhist. Buddha teaches Dhamma. And those who follow him, he calls them Dhammiko, dharmic, Dhammattho, धर्मिष्ठ, धम्मचारी, धम्म विहारी, धम्मी, दीज आर द वर्ड्स ही यूजेस फॉर द पीपल हु फॉलो हिम एंड गेट बेनिफिटेड बाय द टीचिंग. द टीचिंग इज यूनिवर्सल. इट वॉज मच लेटर दैट पीपल स्टार्टेड कॉलिंग देमसेल्व्स बुद्धिस्ट एंड दे स्टार्टेड कॉलिंग द टीचिंग ऑफ बुद्ध एज बुद्धिज्म, विच इज नॉट ट्रू. Buddhism is only for Buddhists, as Hinduism is only for Hindus, Jainism is only for Jains, Sikhism is only for Sikhs, Islam is only for Muslims, Christianity is only for Christians. But Dhamma is for everyone, for everyone. Because Dhamma is law, Dhamma is truth, Dhamma is nature. Attano sabhav, attano lakhan dhareti iti Dhamma. It holds its own characteristic, its own nature. The universal law of nature, how can it be different for the Buddhists? How can it be different for the Hindus? Or for the Muslims, for the Jains, for the Sikhs? How can it be different for the Nepalis or Nevaris or Indians or Americans or Russians? It is universal. The law is applicable to one and all. It does not discriminate. The law of nature does not discriminate. And this is what he was teaching. सब पापस एकरणं, यू अब्स्टेन फ्रॉम ऑल अनहोलसम एक्टिविटीज, यूनिवर्सल. एनी रिलीजन वर्थ द नेम विल नॉट से दैट यू कीप ऑन परफॉर्मिंग अनहोलसम एक्शंस. एवरी रिलीजन वर्थ द नेम विल से, every teacher what the name will say, don't perform unwholesome actions. Kusalasya upasampada, perform wholesome actions. Which religion will say, which teacher will say that not necessary to perform wholesome actions, meritorious actions? Everyone will say that. And say chitta pariyodapanam, keep on purifying your mind. He wants you to purify your mind, totality of it, pariyodapanam, the entire mind must be totally purified. Which religious teacher will say, not necessary to purify your mind? Universal teaching of Dhamma. And yet, a big difference, a very big difference. Buddha is not interested in mere giving sermons. We have been listening to such sermons from centuries. Oh, people of the world, you should not kill, you should not steal, you should not perform sexual misconduct, you should not speak lies, you should not get intoxicated. This was not something new which Buddha said, or Buddha preached, it was there. People listen, listen from one ear, and it goes out of the other ear. They bow down, they say, yes, very good. Sadhu, 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 but I am not going to perform it. Nobody performs, and Buddha is not interested in that. He wants you to practice. Kusalasya upasampada, perform wholesome actions, and the root of all the wholesome actions is your controlled mind, A wholesome, controlled mind. Kusal chittasya ekagata samadhi. You to make your mind wholesome, and then every action that you perform is a wholesome action. And how to do that? Sa chitta pariyodapanam. Purify your mind. Purify your mind. These teachings have been there. These teachings are here now also. But the speciality of Buddha was that he taught us how to practice, how to abstain from unwholesome actions. An alcoholic addict understands very well, I should not take alcohol. A gambler understands very well, I should not gamble. And yet, when the time comes, he takes alcohol and then again repents and again tries to understand, yes, yes, I should not have taken, too bad. Next time I won't take. And again he takes. A gambler knows I should not gamble, and yet when time comes, he gambles. This is what is happening. How to abstain from unwholesome action? You can't, unless you have control over your mind, unless you have mastery over your mind. Intellectually you understand very well. Devotionally you will accept these are the words of Buddha, an enlightened person, or a wise person of this religion or that religion. I should not perform such actions, physical or vocal, which are harmful for others. I should not perform any physical or vocal action which disturbs peace and harmony of other people, which hurts other people, harms other people. I should not perform such actions. In spite of understanding it, one keeps on performing such actions because one is not the master of one's own mind. Buddha gives a very simple technique, a very simple technique, how to control your mind, how to be the master of your own mind. Kusala chittasya ekagata, one-pointed concentration without defiling the mind. You can concentrate your mind by defiling it. A crane is fully concentrated. Concentrated in what? Looking in the water for a fish to devour it. Even a pickpocket is quite concentrated, otherwise he can't pick the pocket. Everything good or bad that you have to do with a concentrated mind. But this is not what he wants. Kusal chittasya ekagata. Your mind must be wholesome and then get concentrated. He gives a wonderful technique. To get your mind concentrated, to train your mind to get concentrated, you require some object or the other. There are many objects with the help of which you can train your mind to get concentrated. Those objects may have the base of craving, may have the base of hatred, may have the base of ignorance, illusion, delusion. Buddha gives an object where no craving is involved, no aversion is involved, no ignorance is involved, no illusion, no delusion, no hallucination. The reality as it is, the reality that you are experiencing yourself as it is. Yathabhuta. Yathabhuta jnana dasanam. The reality of respiration, the breath coming in, the breath going out. It is there. From the time one has taken birth till the time one passes away, one keeps on breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out, asleep or awakened, sitting or standing, walking or lying, eating or drinking, in every position, in every posture, one keeps on breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. But you never care to be aware of it. And Buddha wants you to be aware of it. Just remain aware, do nothing, do nothing. Just remain aware of your breath, the breath as it is, not as you would like it to be, as it is, yatha bhut, not yatha vanchit, not yatha krit, not the breath that you have created, no artificial breath, natural breath, yatha bhut, as it is. If it is deep, it is deep. If it is shallow, it is shallow. If it passes through the left nostril, it passes through the left nostril. Or right nostril, right nostril. Or both the nostrils, both the nostrils. Don't interfere with the natural flow of the respiration. Otherwise, you won't be experiencing the truth. The truth as it is, yatha bhut. For the truth as it is, do nothing. Just observe. Let the nature play its own role. Let Dhamma play its own role. And your role is to observe. Just observe. Tatastha. Someone sitting at the bank of the river is tatastha. The river is flowing. The one sitting at the bank of the river does nothing for the flow of the river. It is natural. Maybe fast. Maybe slow. The water may be very transparent, maybe translucent. He just observes. He is sitting at the bank of the river. Just observe, do nothing. So don't make it a breathing exercise. Don't try to regulate your breath. Don't try to control your breath. Understand, this is no pranayama. This is totally opposite to pranayama. In pranayama, you control your breath. We are not here to condemn different techniques. Pranayama has its own value, its own advantage, its own benefit. But understand the peculiarity of this technique as taught by Buddha. No breathing exercise, no control of the breath. Just accept it as it is. The flow of respiration is there. And you keep your attention steadfastly fixed at the entrance of the nostrils. It is from here that it enters in. It is from here that it goes out. You are like a watchman, a sentinel, just observing the truth as it is, the breath coming in or the breath going out, passing through this nostril or that nostril. You don't change it. If it is shallow, you don't make it deep. If it is deep, you don't make it shallow. Leave it to nature. You just observe. You just observe. This will help you to get your mind concentrated with the wholesome being. When you are observing the breath, you are not craving. You are not craving for the breath. I want more breath, I want more breath. The breath is there, it is coming. And when the breath goes out, you don't have aversion. I don't like the breath, let it go away, I don't like the... No craving, no aversion, the truth is there. The breath is coming in, the breath is going out, and there is no ignorance. This is the truth. You are experiencing it, no illusion, no delusion. Neither raga, nor dvesha, nor moha, that is kushal chittasya ekagata. You are aware. You are just aware, doing nothing. Very easy. You have to do nothing. No physical exercise. Nothing. Things are just happening. You are sitting at the bank of the river. The river is flowing. You are just observing, doing nothing. So easy. And yet so difficult. So difficult. When you will spare time of 10 days and come to a course, and start practicing, you will understand. So difficult. You are aware of just one breath and your mind is gone. You are aware of one breath, it is gone somewhere. And then you become very irritated. What is this? Such a simple job is given to me. Mere observation, nothing but observation. The breath is there. It is coming in, it is going out. I have to observe it. And this mind cannot do even this little work. One gets irritated. Then your guide will say, oh no, no, don't do that. You already are a slave of your own habit pattern of aversion. And you are again generating aversion. Aversion towards this being or that being, or aversion towards your own self or your own mind makes no difference. Aversion is aversion. You become a very miserable person when you generate aversion. You become so agitated when you generate aversion. You lose all your happiness, your all calmness, your peace, your harmony is lost when you generate aversion. And look, this is what you started doing. Oh no, the mind has wandered away. Yes, just accept the fact, the mind has wandered away. At this moment, my mind has wandered away. Good enough, it will come back. You won't have to bring it over. It will come back naturally. Again, the breath is there. The incoming breath, the outgoing breath, the incoming breath, the outgoing breath. Again it will wander away. And again you realize, oh look, it has wandered away. And smiling, you bring it back. So simple, so difficult, yet so simple, so natural. You are observing the nature, you are observing the truth. No imagination is involved. And it is universal because no verbalization is involved, no visualization is involved, no speculation is involved. Just the reality as it is. I know with my own experience and the experience of thousands of people that along with the awareness of respiration, if you use another word with it, any word, you will find your mind gets concentrated easier, quicker. It calms down easily, quickly. And yet it is prohibited. No verbalization. Along with the awareness of respiration, you start imagining the shape, the form of this god or that god, this goddess or that goddess, or even of Buddha. You will find your mind is getting concentrated easier, quicker, yet it is prohibited, totally prohibited. And there is reason for that. The concentration has got its own purpose, its own aim. The concentration of the mind is to explore the truth pertaining to yourself and to keep the whole technique very universal. The moment you use any word, mostly people use words, the names of this particular god or that particular goddess, this saintly person or that saintly person, this teacher, that Buddha, that Arhat, because you have got so much devotion, faith in this person, so it is easy for you to recite even mentally, it is easy for you to recite, so you have these names, but then no universality. Say, if somebody is asked, along with the breath, use the word Buddha, Buddha, Buddha. Then a Jain will say, no, no, Buddha, Buddha. I will say Mahavira, Mahavira. And a Hindu will say, I will say Rama, Rama. And a Christian will say, I will say God, God. A Muslim will say, I say Allah, Allah. Can't be universal. These names cannot be universal. So also the shape, the form cannot be universal. The shape and form will be of this particular god, that particular goddess, this saintly person, that saintly person, this enlightened person, that enlightened person, this founder of this religion or that religion. Again, it can't be uniform. But when you are observing your breath, natural breath, you can't label your breath as this is a Hindu breath, or a Muslim breath, or a Christian breath, or a Buddhist breath. Breath is breath. Law of nature. So long as we are alive, the breath comes in, the breath goes out. A Buddhist can as easily observe the breath as a Hindu, as a Muslim, as a Christian, as a Sikh, as a Jew, makes no difference. And that is why we find that people from different religions, I would say from all the religions, major religions of the world, have been joining Vipassana courses, and they find no difficulty. They find no difficulty because the whole technique is so universal. So universal, you just observe your breath. Why? Why observe breath? Because he wants you to know yourself. Every saintly person has said that, know thyself. But know thyself not merely at the intellectual level. Know thyself not merely at the devotional level or emotional level. Know thyself at the actual level. The actual level, with direct experience, explore the truth about what you say, I. At the intellectual level, you keep on saying, this body is not I. The body is not mine. The body is not my soul. You accept it. But that is at the intellectual level, or maybe just at devotional level, because your teacher has said so. But when you go deep inside, observing the breath, you will start going deeper inside. Then you will find how much you have identified yourself with this body. This body has become I. This body has become mine. Tremendous amount of identification and tremendous amount of attachment towards this body, which makes you so miserable, so miserable. And Buddha wants you to come out of your misery. Realize the truth. So also this mind, the entire mental structure. One keeps on saying at the intellectual level, this mind is not I. This mind is not mine. This mind is not my soul. But this is at the intellectual level or at the blind belief level. Somebody has said so and you accept it. Buddha is not interested in it. If someone is Buddha, he will be never interested in it. He will say, don't believe me. Don't believe your teacher. You realize yourself. You realize the truth yourself. And when you find that, yes, it is really good for me and good for others, then accept it. Not only accept it, live it. When you find that this is not good for me, not good for others, then get out of it. This is what you have to do. You have to realize yourself. Mere accepting something because Buddha has said so will not help. Janato pasato bhagava dhammang deseshi na ajanato na apasato. A Buddha never teaches anything without realizing it himself. After realizing it with direct experience, then he starts teaching it. And then he wants you to experience it directly yourself. And jhana, pasa, all his teaching is full of these two words, jhana, pasa. You realize yourself. Just don't accept everything is anicca, because Buddha said everything is impermanent, we accept everything is impermanent, will not help you. Everything is dukkha, because Buddha said so, so I accept everything is dukkha. Everything is anatta, because Buddha said so. How are you going to get benefited by that? It's a merely devotional game. It's a mere intellectual game. Buddha wants you to have actual experience of anicca, actual experience of dukkha, actual experience of anatta, not just belief. A blind faith, a blind belief is not going to liberate you. I would say, you will become a slave of the belief. However correct that belief may be, you will feel so satisfied that, look, I am believer of this thing which is so true because an enlightened person said so. And you will never care to explore yourself that truth. You are creating difficulty for you. That is why never believe what Buddha says. Experience what Buddha says. And that will really help you. Otherwise, you won't be helped by the teaching of Buddha. And he wants you to do that, to explore the truth about yourself, What you say, I, this physical structure, this mental structure, as you go deep, you will find this mental structure also, you identified so much yourself with this mental structure. And you have got so much of attachment towards this mental structure that you are a miserable person. Explore it yourself. See. See what is this physical structure. See what is this mental structure. These are the two fields where somebody remains under the illusion of I, remains under the illusion of mind, remains so much attached to these two. Let one explore. Explore the entire physical field, explore the entire mental field. Breath is an important tool which will help you to explore your entire corporeal structure, your entire material structure. Breath is a tool which will help you to explore your entire mental structure. At the apparent level, it will look that the breath is just a physical function. The breath going in, coming out is just physical. What it has got to do with the mind? But as you keep on observing the breath as it is, very soon, maybe the second day, maybe the third day, you start realizing breath is very strongly related to your mind. Breath is very strongly related to the mental impurities of your mind. And you are here to find out where the impurities are and how to eradicate them, how to clean them. Therefore, breath is a very important tool. How will you realize that the breath is related to the mind and mental defilements? As you are practicing, breath coming in, going out, coming in, suddenly a thought arises, a thought maybe of the past, a thought may be of the future, a memory of the past or something of the future. That may be pleasant, that may be unpleasant. Say unpleasant memory has come in your mind. And as it comes in the mind, you have started reacting. You have started reacting with anger, with hatred, with aversion, with animosity. And you find, if you are a good meditator, and if you train your mind to be a good meditator to observe the breath as it is, you will notice that as soon as a defilement arises in your mind, a negativity arises in your mind, an impurity arises in your mind, the breath loses its normality. It is no more normal. It will become slightly hard, slightly fast. And when that particular impurity has gone away, the breath again becomes very normal. Oh, so it is so strongly related to my mind and my mental impurities, and I am here to observe my own self full of impurities, observe it myself and take those impurities out. Breath will start helping you. The second day, the third day, when you come to the course, what happens? When you come to the course, you will notice, because you are making an analytical study of the truth as it manifests itself, the breath coming in, the breath going out, and suddenly your mind has wandered. Where it has wandered? In what object? Thousands of objects. You can't keep a diary. You're not allowed to keep any diary. But there are very distinct two fields only. The mind wanders only in two fields. Either it wanders in the field of past memory. It so happened. This memory or that memory. Some memory. It will keep on rolling in this memory or that memory, and suddenly it will make a jump of future. Oh, this should not happen in future, or this should happen in future. I will do like this, I will do like that. Again starts rolling in the future. Again a memory arises in the past. And it will become so clear at the experiential level, not because your teacher says so, not because Buddha has said so. It will be so clear to you, this is the present habit pattern of my mind. Constantly it keeps on rolling in the past, constantly it keeps on rolling in the future. It does not want to live in the present. One has to live in the present. How can you live in the past? The past is gone, and gone forever. You give all the dollars of the world and you want to buy back the moment that has gone and live again. Can't live, that's gone forever. Future is future. Unless it becomes present, you can't live it. You have to live in the present and look the habit pattern of the mind. Constantly running after the past or the future, past or the future, it does not know how to live. That is why it looks so agitated, so miserable. One reality is coming up, which is universal. It is with everybody. This is not the reality of the Buddhists or Hindus or Christians or Muslims or Nepalese or Indian or American or Russian. Universal. The mind is mind. Human being is human being. This reality becomes clearer and clearer. Another reality, by the time you reach the third day or so, will become clear. When it rolls in the past or when it rolls in the future, what kind of thoughts? Then again, two types of thoughts. Major two types of thought, either a memory which is very pleasant, a pleasant memory of the past, or maybe an unpleasant memory of the past, or a thought of the future which may be pleasant or unpleasant. These are the only two fields. The thoughts are either pleasant or unpleasant, pleasant or unpleasant. And if you are a good observer, and this is what you will be taught, how to remain observer of the truth as it is. Don't interfere. Don't condemn. Don't try to change. Just observe. And you will notice that a part of the mind has started reacting. The moment a thought which is pleasant has arisen in your mind, immediately another part of the mind will start reacting. Ah, wonderful. I like it. I like it. I like it more and more, it should be more and more. Or of future, a pleasant thought of future. I like it, I want it, I want it. So also, an unpleasant thought of the past. Oh, I don't like it, I don't like it. This should not happen again. Of future, this should not happen again. Then you will start realizing another habit pattern of your mind. One habit pattern is that it keeps on rolling in the past, it keeps on rolling in the future, it does not stay with the present. The reality of the present is that the breath is coming in, the reality of the present is the breath is going out, it does not want to stay with that. And you are training the mind to learn the art of living, stay with the present. And another habit pattern is, whenever it moves in the past or future, it keeps on generating craving, 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 or aversion, 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 raga, dvesha, lobha, dvesha, lobha, dvesha. Constantly labha, lobha, dosha, lobha. Constantly thoughts are coming. Thoughts are pleasant and there is lobha or raga. Thoughts are unpleasant and there is aversion, there is dvesha. This has become the behavior pattern of the mind at the deepest level. You are not condemning your mind. Don't do that. No guide will tell you to condemn it. No guide will tell you to change it even. Accept the reality. This is the present reality as it is. Yatha bhuta, yatha bhuta, and proceed further. What happens? Buddha wants you to explore the truth about yourself in a very systematic way, in a very scientific way. These two fields are there, the kaya, the body, and chitta, the mind. And you are to explore the reality of these two fields. You are not supposed to play intellectual game. You are not allowed to accept it at the devotional level, what Buddha said. No, nothing doing. You must have direct experience of the truth about this corporeal structure, this physical structure. You must have direct experience of the truth of this mental structure. Kayanu pasyana. Kaye kayanu pasyi biharati. No, one cannot do it. You are not experiencing it. You may be just thinking, this is my head, this is my face. You close your eyes and you keep on imagining the structure of your body. This is not what Buddha wants you to do. You have to feel it. You have to experience it. So with kaya anupashyana, vedana is included. You have to feel it. You have to experience it. Vedanasu vedananupasse viharati. Whenever you practice kaya anupassana, vedana has to be there. Kaya with vedana. Now chitta. Chitte chittanupasse viharati. How can you realize truth of the chitta? Unless something has happened in it. Something must happen in the chitta, and then you say, yes, this is chitta. Sairagangava chittang sairagang chittang tipajanati. Vitaragangava chittang vitaragang chittang tipajanati. Saidosangava chittang saidosang chittang tipajanati. Vitadosangava chittang vitadosang chittang tipajanati. Something has arisen in the mind. Either raga or dvesha or something else. And then you know, you look, this is my mind. And look, this is what is happening there. So with chittanupashana, dhammanupashana has to be added. Now these two fields have become four fields. Kayanupashana, added to it vedananupashana. Chittanupashana, added to it dhammanupashana. What is arising in the mind is dhamma, language of those days. Whatever arises in the mind, dhareti iti dhamma, whatever is chitta is holding, good or bad, whatever it is, anything that arises in the mind, you are observing it. You are observing it. Then only you know that, well, at this moment I have the mind which is full of craving. Or at this moment I have a mind full of aversion. Or at this moment I have a mind which has got no craving or no aversion. Whatever it is, the truth as it is. Experiential level. This is what Buddha wants you. Jana passa. This means experience yourself. Realize yourself. Then only you will get liberated. Otherwise not. All the teachings of Buddha we may accept. But unless we experience ourselves, it will not help us. So, kaya, vedana, chitta and dhamma, these four fields. And by this technique you will find that you have started exploring all these four fields. Starting with the breath. A time will come, third day, or maybe fourth day, when besides observing the breath coming in, going out, you will find that something else is happening here. All the time you were keeping your attention on the entrance of the nostrils, because breath was moving through the nostril. So you have to keep your attention here. Nasagge. And now keeping your attention here, you find that within 3 days, some biochemical reaction is happening here. Some electromagnetic reaction is happening here. Some sensation or the other, which is there all the time, throughout the physical structure. Every moment, there is some biochemical reaction or the other. Some electromagnetic reaction or the other. Something or the other is happening. Some sensation or the other. Maybe heat. Maybe perspiration. Maybe throbbing, pulsing, vibrating, tingling, heaviness, numbness, pressure, tension, strain, pain, anything. Again, you are asked to observe. Without craving, without aversion, just observe the reality of this moment. Look, along with the breath, there is heat. Along with the breath, there is perspiration here. Along with the breath, look, there is palpitation here. Along with the breath, there is a tension here. Something or the other is there. Maybe itching, maybe tickling, maybe prickling. Something is happening here. And you are just observing. You are just observing. Kaya, this is a part of the body. Vedana, a sensation has started on it. You are observing it. Chitta, Dhamma. What is happening in the mind now? Heat has started here. Perspiration has started here. And you will notice that a part of mind says, I don't like it. Heat, I don't like it. Perspiration, I don't like it. And you react. There's itching, and you react. Oh, this part of the mind, the chitta, the dhamma, how they are working. The interaction of the two, the mind and the matter, constant interaction is going on. And by the time you reach the fourth day, the fifth day, the entire physical structure you will find mass of subatomic particles, mass of subatomic particles, all the time, constantly some type or the other of biochemical reaction. Constant reaction is going on. Mind is influencing the matter. The matter is influencing the mind. Constant reaction is going on. Currents are going on inside. Cross currents are going on inside. Undercurrents are going on inside. What is happening? You do nothing. Your job is just to observe. Just observe the reality of nama, the reality of rupa, the reality of chitta, the reality of kaya at the level of experience. That means at the level of vedana. He made a very wonderful statement. He was a scientist, a great scientist that the world has ever produced. Not because some scripture says so, not because a tradition says so, not because my guru has said so. He says, I am not teaching something because I have heard here or heard there. I am not teaching something because I have read here or read there. I have experienced myself, and I am teaching you for you to experience yourself the truth as it is, yathabhuta. Yathabhuta, the interaction of mind and matter, the interaction of mind and matter, it becomes clearer, clearer with your own experience. Then you find where your misery lies. A very wonderful statement he made with the experience. Sabbe dhamma vedana samosarana. A very great statement of Buddha. Sabbe dhamma vedana samosarana. Dhamma means whatever arises in the mind. Even a slight thought arises in the mind. Even a word arises in the mind. No question of a craving arising or aversion arising or impurity arising that will make you so agitated. Even a slight word that arises will result in the flow of a sensation on the body. Sabbe dhamma vedana samusarana. So if you want to realize the truth of dhamma, that means the truth of what is arising in your mind, you have to be with your sensations. Every time you have to be with your sensation, whether you are realizing the truth of the body or you are realizing the truth of the mind, you have to be with the sensation. Then only you are experiencing it. Then you are not playing an intellectual game. Then you are not playing a devotional game. You are just experiencing what the truth is, what the truth is, what the truth is. And many students on the sixth day or seventh day, some on the eighth day or ninth day, they reach the stage. Initially, when a sensation arises, the truth of the law of nature becomes clearer and clearer, arising, passing away, arising, passing away. A pain has arisen, however intensified, solidified it may be, but sooner or later it has to pass away. You are experiencing it, arises to pass away. Itching has arisen, it arises to pass away. Tickling has arisen, it arises to pass away. Heat has arisen. Anything that you experience within the framework of the body, you find it arises, sooner or later it passes away. This is what he called Uday Vyajnana. Uday Vyajnana. Look, arising, passing, arising, passing. Similarly, in your mind, a thought arises, aversion arises, craving arises, fear arises, ego arises, it arises. Sooner or later it passes away. It arises, it passes away. You are observing this reality. Reality of anicca. Now is no more a philosophy. Philosophy is just to be accepted because Buddha said so. There is no such thing as Buddhist philosophy. He wants you to experience the truth of anicca. Look, arising, passing, observing, 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 one reaches the stage where the entire physical structure, there is no solidity at all. The entire physical structure is mass of subatomic particles, and not a single subatomic particle is solid. All vibrations, vibrations, vibrations. And this is what you call bhanga, the stage of bhanga. 25 or 26 centuries back, this great scientist announces, sabbo pajjalito loko, sabbo loko pakampito. The entire universe is nothing but combustion and vibration. Combustion and vibration. He's experienced that. Janato pasato bhagavadhammangadeshesi, because he experienced it. And he says that the scientists of the West, a century back, they accepted this fact. Throughout the material world, there is no solidity at all. Mere wavelets, wavelets, wavelets. They accepted it at the intellectual level. They didn't accept it at the direct experience level. Buddha experienced it and he announces, Sabbo Pajjalito Loko, Sabbo Loko Pakampito, within the framework of the body. Everyone can realize it. Combustion, vibration, the entire structure is bhanga, no solidity at all. Not a belief. This has to be experienced. And people do experience on this path. Then what happens? Throughout the physical structure, bhanga, throughout the mental structure, initially, say anger as a reason. It will arise with so much of intensity. Fear as a reason, so much intensity. Passion as a reason, so much intensity. But you keep on observing it, and the sensation. You observe the passion, you observe the sensation. You observe anger, you observe sensation. And you will find the intensity gets divided, dissected, disintegrated, divided, dissected, disintegrated, dissolved. The entire physical structure dissolved. The entire mental structure dissolved. This is bhanga, total dissolution. And when one reaches that stage in meditation, one takes attention on the eyes, eye sense door, vibration, nothing but vibration. Ear sense door, nothing but vibration. Nose sense door, nothing but vibration. Tongue sense door, nothing but vibration. Body skin sense door, nothing but vibration. Mind sense door, nothing but vibration. Oh, all the six sense doors. Again, another contribution of the enlightened one. Before him, all the teachers were talking of Panchendriya. Five sense doors. He says, no, the sixth sense door is much more important than these five sense doors. They are also important, no doubt, but there are six sense doors. So, nama, rupa, the mind and the matter. Nama, rupa, pachaya, salayatanam. There are six sense doors, out of which the mind sense door is very important. These six sense doors, one observes by this meditation, every part of it, look how what is happening, mere vibration. Then the objects of these sense doors, respective objects, a shape, a form, a color, a light, object of the eyes. It comes in contact with the eyes, vibration. A sound comes in contact with the ear, vibration. A smell comes in contact with the nose, vibration. A taste comes in contact with the tongue, vibration. Something tangible comes in contact with the body, vibration. A thought comes in contact with the mind, vibration. Six sense doors, vibration. Objects of six sense doors, vibration. Now what happens? Nama rupa pachaya sarayatana. Sarayatan pachaya bhasa. When you got these six sense doors, at one sense door or the other, there is bound to be some contact. Contact at the eye level or ear level or nose level or tongue level, there is a contact. And then with this contact, bhasa pachaya vedana, there is a sensation. This was the realization of Buddha. Every sense door contact is there every time, one contact or the other, on one sense door or the other. And as soon as there is a contact, there is a sensation on the body. And vedana pachaya tanha. Because of the sensation on the body, you react with craving, you react with aversion. This was the reality found out by Buddha. No teacher before him or no teacher after him talked of vedana. They will simply say these five sense doors and their respective objects. Don't generate craving towards this object. Don't generate craving towards that object. Don't generate aversion towards this object. Don't generate aversion towards that object. That's all. But where this craving or aversion arises, the root of it, the source of it, this was what found by Buddha. And that is how, why he said, Pubbe ananusutte sudhamme suchakkhum utupadi. I had never heard this before. There was no teacher to say this before. Everyone was talking only five doors, five senses, no craving, no aversion. And he found out vedana. It is because of vedana that craving arises or aversion arises. Analyzing the truth, dividing, dissecting, disintegrating, and analyzing the truth at the experiential level, it becomes so clear. Say one takes the attention on the ear sense too, vibration, vibration. A sound has come in contact. The sound is also vibration, vibration. One type of vibration has come in contact with another type of vibration, and this results in a third type of vibration. Like you struck a gong, and there is a vibration in the gong. Not only on the spot where you struck it, but the entire gong starts vibrating. So not only the ear sense door where the sound has come in contact, it starts vibrating. The entire body will start vibrating. One part of the mind will raise its head. In the language of those days, he called it vijnana, consciousness. The consciousness arises and says, look, something has happened. Something has happened at the ear sense door. Maybe similarly at the eye sense door, nose sense door, tongue sense door, body sense door, mouth. Something has happened. One part of the mind has done its job. Then immediately another part of the mind will raise its head. And that is what he called sanya. Its job is to recognize. With all the memory of the past, with all the experience of the past, it will memorize what it is. A sound has come. Hey, what it is? Oh, these are the words. Oh, words of abuse. Words of praise. This is the job of the second part of the mind, sanya. Not only that, not only recognizing, it also gives evaluation. Words of abuse. Oh, very bad. Words of praise. Ah, wonderful. Evaluation has been given to that. And now the third part of the mind will raise its head, which he called Vedana. This part of the mind, now a feeling starts on the body. The vibration which was very neutral, when this word came in contact with your ear, it was a very neutral vibration throughout the body. That as soon as evaluation is given, this is abuse and very bad, you will find it has become very unpleasant. Very unpleasant sensation throughout the body. As soon as evaluation is given, oh, this is praise. Ah, wonderful. And a very pleasant sensation has started in the body. Third part of the mind. And then the fourth part of the mind will raise its head. Sankhara, its job is to react. React either with craving or with aversion. If the sensations are very unpleasant, it will react with aversion. I don't like it. I don't like it. At the surface level, you will keep on thinking that I am reacting to this abuse. See the difference. The whole life, we keep on thinking that I am reacting with aversion towards the abuse, which is very bad. I am reacting with craving for the praise, which is very good, which is wrong. It is an illusion. It is a delusion. The real fact is that I am reacting to my sensations. When it is unpleasant, I react with aversion. When it is pleasant, I react with craving. Truth becomes so clear at the deepest level. Now you know how the mind and matter are reacting. How the mind and matter, how the mind generates matter, how the matter generates mind. Such an interaction is going on throughout. Another very deep thing that he realized, what he called asava. The entire Indian philosophy is full of this word ashrava. The Jains will say asava, Hindus will say ashrava. And to come out of ashrava is a big attainment, like becoming liberated. Buddha also said the same thing, anasava, nirasayu, kinasava, come out of asava. What asava? What is asava? When you practice vipassana, it becomes so clear. The word asava means a flow. A flow. Yes, there is a flow. You will notice that as soon as you generate anger, or hatred, or passion, or fear, or ego, any impurity in the mind, there is a flow. There is a biochemical flow with the flow of the blood. And because you generated anger, and this asava, this particular asava, this particular biochemical flow is product of your anger, it is very unpleasant. Very unpleasant. Your entire structure now is full of this flow, which is very unpleasant, and you react again. You react with anger. You react with anger. There is more biochemical flow. There is more biochemical flow. You more react with anger. A vicious circle started. Somebody abused you only once, and he has gone away. He abused you to make you unhappy for one moment. But you keep on keeping yourself unhappy for hours together. Why? What happens? And Buddha realizes it, what happens. This chemical flow inside, this reaction of the mind and matter, continuous reaction of the mind and matter, how to come out of it? And he finds out a way how to come out of it. When there is this reaction, the flow has started, and you observe, the flow is nothing but a sensation. What you call unpleasant is nothing but an unpleasant sensation. What you call pleasant is nothing but a pleasant sensation on the body. There is this pleasant sensation or unpleasant sensation, and you observe, you observe, you observe, you don't react, you don't react. You are coming out of your old mad habit. Your habit of reacting to pleasant with craving, your habit of reacting with aversion towards unpleasant, you are breaking that habit. And that has to be done at the root level, not merely at the intellectual level. It won't work. He was so clear. He was so clear in his teaching. What the Western scientists say, the conscious mind, which is a very small part of the mind, Buddha never used these words, conscious or unconscious or half-conscious. He says, paritta chitta, very small part of the mind. Yes, it is a very small part. What you call conscious mind in the West is a very small part, and the rest of it is a very huge, very big part. The part which is a very small part does not know what is happening at the deeper level. And because it does not know what is happening at the deeper level, it remains slave of its own reaction, its own habit. The deeper level is constantly in contact with body sensations and keeps on reacting with craving or aversion, craving or aversion. The technique that he gave to the world is a technique which broke the barrier between the conscious mind and the unconscious mind. Whatever was felt by the unconscious mind, the so-called unconscious mind, is now being felt by the conscious mind. And the conscious mind understands very well that I should not react. I should not react with craving or with aversion. And that is why you are training not merely your conscious mind, you are training your mind at the deep unconscious level. A wonderful way, a wonderful technique, which a Buddhist can do very well, an Hindu can practice very well, a Muslim can practice very well, a Christian can practice very well. There is no difficulty at all. Because when you talk of the breath, observing the breath, no Hindu, no Muslim, no Christian, no philosophy involved. When you talk of your body sensations, no Hindu, no Muslim, no Buddhist, no philosophy is involved. You are just observing the reality and you are changing the habit pattern of your mind. Buddha wants you to change the habit pattern of your mind. The habit pattern of the mind which keeps you so miserable day and night throughout the life. Life after life, the same habit pattern continues with you and you can't come out of it. And here is the enlightened person who teaches you how to come out of misery. People don't understand. Then they talk of Buddha as a pessimist person. He talks of dukkha, dukkha. What he talks of dukkha? He talks of dukkha nirodha. He talks how to come out of misery. Misery is there. This is the reality. You can't run away from it. It is a reality. You are suffering from it. Everyone is suffering from it. And here is a master teacher who gives such a scientific way, a scientific technique to come out of that misery in a very simple way. Just observe, do nothing, just observe, do nothing. Observe, observe, observe. It gets purified, purified, and it becomes pariyodhapanam. Not only the one part of the mind gets purified, the totality of the mind gets purified, and you are a happier person. You live a good life, harmonious life, which is good for you, good for others. When you generate impurity in the mind, you make yourself miserable and you make others miserable. When you are a peaceful person, free from defilements, you are happy, you are peaceful, and you generate nothing but peace and harmony for others. The teaching of Buddha, the Dhamma, is nothing but a way of life, an art of living, how to live peacefully, how to live harmoniously within, and how to generate nothing but peace and harmony for others. Whether you are a Buddhist or non-Buddhist, makes no difference. Give a trial to this technique. Give a fair trial to this technique and see whether it really works. Don't just accept because Buddha said so. Don't just accept because this teacher says so. You yourself realize it, and you will find it gives the result here and now, in this very life. You won't have to wait till the end of the life. May all of you who have come this evening for this Dhamma talk, I am sure all of you have got seed of Dhamma. That is why you have come here. This seed may not remain seed for the whole life. Let it grow. Let it flower. Let it give fruits and enjoy the best fruits of Dhamma. May all of you enjoy the best fruits of Dhamma. May all of you. Observation of breath is only source for vipassana. Is observation not an abhyas, एंड इज अभ्यास पॉसिबल विदाउट वैराग्य?
बहुत अच्छा प्रश्न किया कि केवल सांस को देखने मात्र से अभ्यास ही हो जाएगा, वैराग्य कहाँ हुआ? बहुत बड़ा वैराग्य हुआ ना, हम सांस के प्रति राग नहीं पैदा कर रहे हैं। सांस जब धीमा हो जाएगा तो बड़ा प्रिय लगेगा, बड़ा अच्छा लगेगा। जब तेज है तो उसके साथ साथ बेचैनी है, लेकिन जब धीमा होता जाएगा तो बड़ा प्रिय लगेगा। लेकिन सिखाने वाला सिखाएगा राग नहीं करना, जैसा है वैसा है, बस इसे देखे जा, तो वैराग्य अपने आप हो गया, राग निकला कि वैराग्य हुआ।
This was a question by Professor Dr. Mishra, head of the Department of Thinking here in Trivandrum University.
What difference do you feel in Vipassana technique and
Anasakti.
Oh. अगेन यस, दिस इज अनाशक्ति। बिल्कुल, हाँ हाँ, बहुत अच्छा प्रश्न है। मैं एक बात कहूँ कि बहुत कट्टर हिंदू सनातनी घर में जन्मा और पला, और इस बात का बड़ी खुशी है कि बहुत कट्टर हिंदू सनातनी घर में जन्मा और पला, तो वो सारे संस्कार, वो सारी शिक्षाएँ मेरे साथ हैं। खूब गीता का अभ्यास करते थे, अनाशक्ति की बातें खूब समझते थे, वीतराग वीतद्वेष वीतराग भय क्रोध स्थित धीर मुनि उच्यते वगैरह वगैरह खूब करते थे, अच्छा भी लगता था। अनासक्त हो जाएं, आसक्त रहेंगे तो दुखियारे हो जाएंगे। कैसे अनासक्त हो जाएं ये किसी ने नहीं सिखाया, कैसे वीतराग हो जाएं ये किसी ने नहीं सिखाया, करना नहीं सिखाया। उपदेश तो बड़े अच्छे हैं, बहुत अच्छे हैं, वेदांत में उपदेश, गीता में उपदेश, पर करें कैसे? बुद्ध ने करना सिखा दिया। अनासक्त कैसे, कि जो कुछ अपने अंदर हो रहा है उसके प्रति हमें आसक्ति नहीं, केवल देख रहे हैं, दृष्टा भाव है, साक्षी भाव है, तटस्थ भाव है, तो आसक्ति नहीं है, बिल्कुल अनासक्त हैं। ये बाहर बाहर की वस्तुओं से, व्यक्तियों से, स्थितियों से अनासक्त होना, ये ऊपर ऊपर की अनासक्ति हो गई। जब तक भीतर से अनासक्ति नहीं आई तब तक वो दृढ़ नहीं हुई। आज लगेगा कि हम देखो कितनी अनासक्त हैं, किसी ने गाली दी हमको कोई असर नहीं पड़ा, किसी ने प्रशंसा की कोई असर नहीं पड़ा, लेकिन क्योंकि भीतर आसक्ति भरी पड़ी है तो इतने जोरों से कभी वॉल्केनिक इरप्शन होगा, ज्वालामुखी फूटेगा कि सारी अनासक्ति धरी रह जाएगी, और जड़ों से अनासक्त हो जाएंगे तो बड़ा कल्याण हो जाएगा। हाँ जी, और
Welcome.
Could you explain Anapan Sati method of Lord Buddha? This is what I explained, observing the breath as it is, not playing the game with the breath, not controlling the breath, just observe the breath as it is. Or
last question.
How could a person remain as a witness of his breathing process whole day? Well, that's what I say. It becomes so tedious. Although it is so easy, one feels so bored about it. And the mind keeps on wandering, and you train your mind, bring back on this reality, it wanders, you bring back on the reality, and that is how it gets concentrated. You are training your mind to remain with the truth in a concentrated way. How could a person be enlightened? More and more you realize the truth. This is enlightenment, this is a process of enlightenment. You are getting enlightened about yourself. You are getting enlightened about this mind and matter structure. You are getting enlightened about their interaction. You are getting enlightened how misery starts. You are getting enlightened how can you come out of misery. This is enlightenment, the process of enlightenment. If one came to experience that the entire body and mind is composition of raga and dvesha, is it voidness or nibbana? Far away. Nibbana and voidness is far away. Now you accept the reality. There is craving. Craving is craving. Aversion is aversion. And you keep on observing it. When craving comes, don't try to push it away. Don't try to suppress it. Just accept the fact, look, there is craving in my mind now. And let me see what sensations are there. Craving, sensation, and you will find the craving becomes weaker, weaker, weaker. It is neither suppressed, it is nor expressed, it passes away. So also aversion has come. You just accept the fact, there is aversion. And you keep on observing the sensation that is there at that time. The sensation, the aversion, the sensation, the aversion, You have not expressed it, you have not suppressed it, it becomes weaker, 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 passes away. You just try and you will find it is so wonderful. It gives result here and now.
This is a question by Dr. Rohan Imre.
Excuse me asking a personal question. In your long experience, how much realization you have attained? Wonderful. Well, from the day I started till today, I have certainly realized many realities which were unknown to me. I don't say that I have become a Buddha, but it is true that I am a much, much happier person than what I was.
You look it.
And I am happy to see others also to become such happy person. This technique helps. Negation, truth, knowledge, power, God, and nothingness. Define in English, define and explain. Any word you use and any expression you use will not be sufficient to explain something which has to be experienced. It is only by experience. Whatever way one talks, it will not be a totality of the truth. It will be partial truth which might be distorting. So come and experience yourself and you get answer for everything.